everybody. Welcome to the Third Line Plugs SenseCast. I am your host, Taylor Gibson. Joining me, as always, from the tropical metropolis of Calgary, Alberta, my co-host, Tim Jesse. Tim, how's it going, my man?
Going good. Got cold again, but that's the way she goes. And weird week of hockey we got here, eh?
It is a weird week of hockey, and it was something that I didn't get a chance to watch any of the games this week. Got a chance to watch some of the condensed versions of the games, but, you know, judging from some of the scores, I don't think I missed much.
No, I don't think so.
No. I don't think so either.
Well, the New Jersey game was really good.
Yeah, that's probably the only thing that I was seeing from social media, that the Devils game seemed to be pretty good. But other than that, everything else was just kind of not good.
It was what it was, right?
Exactly. You know what's also what it is, Tim? Is us talking about our cover athlete for today's episode, Season 7, Episode 23, in chronological order, Episode 173, the Jarkko Ruutu episode. So, just a little background about Jarkko Ruutu. He was selected 68th overall by the Vancouver Canucks in 1998. He played parts of 11 seasons in the NHL with the Vancouver Canucks, Pittsburgh Penguins, Ottawa Senators, and the Anaheim Ducks, recording 58 goals, 84 assists for 142 points in 652 career games.
Yeah, and for a guy who is kind of mostly known as like one of the kind of grit agitator type, not really an enforcer, he had a surprising amount of give to him for a guy who kind of came up in that early 2000, like the early to late 2000s, where 12 goals, 14 assists in 2009-2010 at 34 for that sort of player is pretty impressive, because they were typically just not expected to really do all that much, just kind of be annoying and not get blown out in the defensive end.
Yeah, and that's a style of play that we're definitely going to be talking about later on in this episode when we get to talk about top of the hour. But for myself, Jarkko Ruutu is one of those players that you would think I would have more memories of Jarkko Ruutu. I remember him as a player, but if you were to ask me, what do you remember about Jarkko Ruutu? I think the only thing that really comes to mind is an incident that happened. I believe he was with Pittsburgh, and the player that it happened to him got suspended like 31 games.
Huh.
That's a little foreshadowing for a story we've got to talk about with top of the hour. But Jarkko Ruutu is an Ottawa Senator. He was interesting.
The thing with Jarkko Ruutu as an Ottawa Senator is he had a role to play kind of a sandpaper type guy. And at 5-on-5, he did it really well. Well, he did it well enough, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, he was a prototypical bottom sixer.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember him and Chris Neal actually made a fairly effective third line for Ottawa. You didn't really have to wince when he was on the ice, because the puck generally went the right way.
Yeah, generally. I mean, he was not a complete scrub in his own end. For his style of play, you know, that agitator, grinder type of guy, he did his job, he did it well. And also, he has just such a punchable face that it seemed kind of perfect he was in that role.
The other impressive thing is he played until he was 35, which is, again, pretty rare for someone in that role.
After his career, he went back and played a number of years in Europe, finished out his career, and seems like he's living okay.
Yeah, no, which is all you can really ask for. And for a guy who was just, for pretty much all of his career, a solid depth player, I believe he won a Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh. No, Detroit won it that year, his last year in Pittsburgh. So he went to the finals with Pittsburgh.
That's right, because he joined the Senators the next year, correct?
Yeah, he was on Pittsburgh in 07-08. So, like, this is a guy who he'd been around, he'd actually played important minutes in the playoffs, and he just had a pretty cool career.
Even when you look at that 07-08 Penguins team, where you had Ruutu, Georges Laroque, you had guys like that to really mock it up, and then you had Gary Roberts, Ryan Malone. Like, Pittsburgh legit had a pretty solid top six, and even a very good top six and a very solid bottom six.
I believe one of those years is when they had Jordan Staal anchoring their third line.
Yeah, and then you have the acquisition of Marian Hossa coming in.
Yeah, that team was probably one of the best teams to lose the Stanley Cup in a while.
Yeah, and then the Red Wings took that crown the next year.
It was just funny seeing the repeat, right?
What a
And
time
then
to be alive.
yeah, no, like there were some excellent series in like those immediately after the lockout to about it probably like the half season. Those were good seasons to watch. The 08 run where Detroit wins it, and then the 09 where Pittsburgh wins it. There's some very funny gems in there, like Pittsburgh beating Washington in game seven, then sweeping Carolina in the conference finals.
But even the first couple of years where the teams that were playing in the conference finals were all surprise teams or surprise teams, with the exception of maybe Detroit and Ottawa.
Yeah. And even Ottawa was just kind of the conference semifinals with Hasek out. That's definitely one of those what if seasons.
Well, heck, I mean, Buffalo made the conference finals back to back years and they didn't even sniff the finals.
Yeah,
Well, actually, I
that's
shouldn't
right.
say that. 05, 06, they did, but they lost.
Yeah, because they lost to Carolina in seven. With the Buffalo head.
Oh, the goat head. Still one of my favorite jerseys of all time.
You know what? Maybe it was because they switched to the Buffalo slug is why they lost.
You know what? I could believe that. I could believe that. Maybe that was the beginning of their downward spiral, Tim.
That could be fair. Could be fair.
Yep. So, Tim, we're going to move away from talking about Yarkuru and announce who next week's cover athlete is going to be for next week's episode, Season 7, Episode 24, in chronological order, Episode 174. Boro Cop himself, Mark Borowiecki, is our cover athlete.
Oh, that's going to be a fun one.
I mean, thankfully, with next week's cover athlete, we won't have to ask the question, did Boro Cop blow up the old couple? Craig Bedaglia already confirmed that.
Was a great interview.
Oh my God, it's still one of my favorite interviews we ever did. And that says a lot because we've had some really good interviews here on Third Line Plug in the 7 seasons we've done this show.
Well, we've just been blessed to have pretty high quality of guests over the years, too.
It's really true because there really isn't anybody that we've walked away from going like, eh, we kind of regret that.
That's for sure.
You know what I also don't regret, Tim, among many things, is asking the question that I love asking every single week. Because our listeners love knowing about how's everything been going, man?
It's been good. Just busy getting things ready, obviously. But yeah, not too much to say.
Yeah, just the usual stuff.
Yep. Yes, we're doing baby preparations and then getting things ready for Easter here as well.
Yeah, I know, because you guys are just under a month away now.
Yeah, crazy to think about.
I know. Man, I can't wait to come out to meet the little one,
It'll
man. It's
be
gonna be
fun.
Oh, it's going to be so good. It's going to be so good. Now, I don't have too much to talk about on my end regarding my week, but I do have something I do want to comment on. And no, it has nothing to do with Shohei Ohtani's gambling debts. That's a different episode altogether. But so Katrina and I had this conversation the other day. So the Juno Awards was this past weekend.
It
And you know
was.
how, yes, it was. And you know how we hang shit on the Super Bowl for having acts from like 15, 20 years ago that's not relevant anymore.
Yeah.
The Junos got Nelly Furtado to do it. We were kind of talking about this because honestly, I always assumed Nelly Furtado, after her big album in 2006, kind of dipped the way that, in a way, Shania Twain kind of did, where she had an album, she dipped, and then years later she came back without obviously all the messy stuff behind the scenes. And the more I think about it, the more I realize Nelly Furtado kind of went the way of Hoobastank. Now, hear me out on this. Hoobastank in 2004 had a big album, The Reason, which is not good, and I will to say that to this day. And then it's an album that effectively, I don't even say ended their career, but kind of ended their relevance. Because let me ask you, when was the last time you've ever thought of heard a Nelly Furtado song on the radio?
I also just don't listen to the radio, right?
True, but even if you're in the car though, and you just happen to have it on, like I couldn't tell you the last time I've heard a Nelly Furtado song. And honestly, I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, maybe she didn't put out anything. And I looked it up. She had three albums that's been out since 2006. And one of them was a Spanish only because she is Like, she is Canadian. She was from Vancouver Island, but her family's Portuguese, so a lot of it was in, that their native tongue. So she had two albums in English, and I looked at it and I'm like, huh, I did not realize that. And I'm looking at the albums like, I don't recognize any of this stuff. And it's probably because it had no chart success. Like, it probably came out, and that was just it.
I forgot she existed, honestly. But then again, I also forgot that the Junos were a thing.
Yeah. I have never once in my life really cared about the Junos.
Yeah, they exist.
Yeah, the only thing I remember of the Junos was going back to Shania Twain. So in 2003, the Junos were held at the Correll Center in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And Shania Twain, during every commercial break, she would come back and she'd have a jersey or something on one of the teams. And I remember she came out in a Leaf jersey and the crowd booed her off the stage.
That's funny.
And then later on, she comes back in an Ottawa Senators outfit and she got a big cheer.
Just figured it out.
She figured it out, man. She figured it out. And I like it. But yeah, it was just kind of funny. I was just like, wow, Nelly Furtado. That's a blast from the past. I do not remember the last time I thought of her. And you know how in the last couple of years, we're seeing artists like Limp Bizkit and Creed, bands who've had no relevance over the years, all of a sudden made a big comeback. You could possibly put Nelly Furtado on that list of artists like who could make a comeback this year. Because if you go back and listen to her first couple of albums, they're actually not that bad, and they're actually kind of still kind of decent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just one of those things that, like, I guess.
I don't know. Food for thought anyway. I mean, Nelly Furtado still could be on that list, so what can we say, right?
Exactly.
Well, Tim, I'm gonna stop talking about Nelly Furtado because honestly, I feel it's the time of the episode where we segue into this little segment I like to call Top of the Hour. Good stuff, good stuff. Now, Tim, obviously, in the seventh season we've been doing this show, I do sound like a broken record every time we got to talk about death. But instead of kicking it off talking about death, we got it started off by talking about a happy news story. Because something I didn't mention, I failed to add in top of the hour when I sent it over here on Saturday. Brady Tkachuk and his wife announcing they are expecting their first child together.
It's so lovely. And I hope it's a little hellion too.
Oh my God, could you imagine a Brady spawn?
Yeah, that'd be funny.
Yeah, I do love the fact that Matthew's first question when Brady told him was, "Am I the Godfather?" Which you would have to believe Matthew would be the Godfather.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd 100% have to. I mean, God, could you imagine? Not only does his wife have to deal with Brady, he's now got a second version of Brady coming.
Oh, that's so funny.
It is really funny. It is really funny. Now, what's not funny is unfortunately we have a couple of deaths to talk about this week here on Top of the Air. And we're going to start off by talking about former Pittsburgh Penguin Konstantin Koltsov passed away at the age of 42. Koltsov, selected by the Penguins in 1999, 18th overall, played parts of three seasons with the Penguins, recording 12 goals, 26 assists for 38 points in 144 games.
42 is so young.
It is so young. And that's kind of the sad thing when you read about these stories, especially for players who, realistically, when you hear about ages like 42, and you think about, we're not that far off that.
Yeah, so sad to see just someone so young take their own life.
Yeah, it's incredibly sad. And a death this past week that I have to say surprisingly hit me pretty decent. It was one of those deaths that, and I look, I've made no bones here on Top of the Hour and even on Third Line Plug that growing up as a kid, I always had a soft spot for those tough guys in the NHL, whether it be from Bob Probert to Stu Grimson, Rob Ray, stuff like that. The passing of Chris Simon,
Yeah.
at the age of 52, played 15 seasons in the NHL with the Nordiques slash Avalanche, played for Washington, Chicago, the Rangers, the Flames, the Islanders, and the Minnesota Wild, recording 305 points in 864 games, while recording 1,824 penalty minutes.
Instead of inserting my own take on here, I'm just going to read the byline from one of our former guests, Melissa Burgess. The NHL loves its players and the positive they bring to the league. The league directly profits from its players and what they do on the ice, including the always popular fights that involve adult men punching one another in the face. But what happens after? The family of Chris Simon, who was 52, believed his death was death by suicide was associated with CTE.
Yeah, it's incredibly sad. Again, 52 is very young, but also when you have a player like Chris Simon, and you know how we were talking about Jarkko Ruutu earlier in this episode, Chris Simon is one of those guys that I think I look back on Chris Simon's career and I often think, you know, you think about players at the NHL who were those kind of quote unquote goons, you know, you may play 2, maybe 3 years, you get a handful of games, get in a number of fights, trying to make yourself an NHL guy.
Chris Simon played for almost 2 decades.
And then you have Chris Simon. And Chris Simon is the complete opposite of that. He was definitely a tough guy for sure. But, you know, and he wasn't just some bit player. He wasn't just some fighter. You don't play 15 seasons in the NHL if you don't have talent. And he not only did he have talent, he was a key contributor to 3 teams that went to the Stanley Cup Finals. He won the Cup with the Avalanche in 96, traded to the Washington Capitals in 96, goes to the Finals with them in 98, where he was a key contributor to the Capitals, bounces around for a couple of years, 2004, gets traded from the Rangers to the Calgary Flames, goes to the Finals with the Flames, and then he heads off to the Islanders, and this is where, unfortunately, where I think a lot of people, when they think of Chris Simon, the 2 incidents that always haunted Chris Simon's career, the 2-handed slash on Ryan Hollweg.
Yeah.
And the stomp on Jarkko Ruutu.
Yeah.
Both of which got him big, big suspensions. The 2-handed slash got him 25 games, and the stomp got him 31.
The stomp in particular really deserved it because it was vicious. And that's not to say that it was uniquely vicious. There's definitely been plays in the NHL that deserved more than what he got. But when you are doing stuff like that, it's going to catch up to you. And what's wild is, like, he got traded off the island to Minnesota, and he was back in the playoffs in the last year of his career, too.
And it's very unfortunate with especially how Chris Simon left this world, because for what off-ice issues he's had post-career, nobody deserves to go through what he did off the ice in post-career. And again, this is yet another failure of the NHL to recognizing CTE as a real problem, where you have at leagues like the NFL, who the NFL for a long time did not recognize CTE. It wasn't until Dave Duerson, who is in the players union, took his own life. That's when the NFL finally took it seriously. And it's just so sickening that the NHL still does not take it seriously. And again, Chris Simon, he goes along the list of the Wade Belaks, Rick Rippins, guys who put their body on the line, put it all out on the ice for their teammates, and this is how they go out in life.
Yeah. It sucks.
It does. And when I think of Chris Simon, the thing that really stood out to me, and again, you got to realize at the time that Chris Simon played, you know, a lot of the enforcers in the NHL were 6'2", 6'3", something like that. And then you have Chris Simon, who I believe was like 6'5", massive guy, really long hair, goatee. He was just so... The best way I could describe that is for listeners of the show, if you've ever seen the show Shoresy, he would have been perfect as one of the Jims. He would have been so perfect. And One thing that I think a lot of people fail to realize about Chris Simon, you know, because you think of the toughness, in 99-2000, he scored 30 goals in the NHL.
Yep. And even when you look at the fancy stats, which are usually not kind to that type player, he ranks in as like a top nine player.
Finished, I believe, like 17th or 18th in Hart Trophy voting. And I often think, because I have it in 99-2000, if he had done that in 1986, teams would have been falling head over heels to get him. And it's not like Chris Simon, before all of his success, didn't have a notable start to his career, because again, he got drafted by the Flyers, which, oh my God, can you imagine if Chris Simon had been a Philadelphia Flyer in his career? They would have loved him in that city. But then 2 years after he got drafted, he was involved in the Eric Lindros trade.
Hat trade, man.
Again, this is just such a gut-punching passing for me personally. I grew up, even though I was never a Washington fan, I just remember him so much as a Washington Capital. Like the big plays that he actually did make in the NHL, the cup runs he made. He's going to be a guy, he's going to be severely missed.
For sure. And it'll be interesting to see if the NHL continues to bury its head in the sand or not.
Exactly. So, Tim, we got to give a couple of quick shout outs. And we're going to stick with the Washington Capitals because their current captain, Alexander Ovechkin, passed Joe Thornton for 13th on the all-time point list at 1,540.
You know what's incredible? At the beginning of this season, we were worried about Ovechkin kind of falling off pace because he was just having a hard time finding the net. On track to have a 30 goal season.
Yeah, and
Like,
he's
just
doing it.
wild.
It's so wild. And again, he's doing it at a time where it's fair that everybody probably would have written him off by now, because it's like, okay, you're what, 37, 38, you're nearing the end of your career. Okay, maybe this is the official end of Alex Ovechkin, and now he's within 50 goals of the all-time goal record.
Yeah, like the end of Alex Ovechkin has been greatly overstated.
And another guy that I think people have also written off too is Los Angeles Kings captain Anze Kopitar, who recorded his 1,200th career point during their game versus the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, that's. I always wonder how people could just kind of write off Anze Kopitar, right? He's a guy who's never really shown any signs of going quietly into that good night, you know?
No, I mean, he's had some seasons where you look at the point totals and you're thinking, okay. You know, there might be a little bit of an argument there, but again, he's just been so consistent. And his game is something that I don't know what it would really take for him to actually fall off.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like Joe Pavelski as well, right?
With Anze Kopitar, and this is not something I've asked here on Third Line Plug. In terms of the all-time LA Kings, you know, you got your Marcel Dions, your, well, obviously your Wayne Gretzky's. Where does Anze Kopitar rank in the all-time Kings list? Would you say, I would say top five, easy.
Top five easy, and honestly, given his extended quality play with LA and the fact that he's brought him two cups, I think he might be the best king.
Yeah, I would say strictly by talent, I would say that for sure of the modern era. I know a lot of votes would go to Dustin Brown being the number one king, but I think that's more on what, more of what he represented more than what he brought to the table.
I think that's fair. And what's funny is like for LA is you have Anze Kopitar who's 36 and he's still your top center with Quentin Byfield and Philip Deneau on the team and Pierre-Luc Dubois moved to left wing.
Who's just having the worst kind of season right now? It's not even funny.
Not even funny, yeah.
St. Louis Blues, Nick Leddy also played in his 1,000th career game this week, Tim.
That one's more surprising because Leddy is one of those guys where. Well, I guess maybe it's not surprising in the sense that he seems like the type of defenseman who would be overrated by GMs, where he kind of looks like it's this weird mix of not really being able to move the puck but shoots really well. Admittedly, in his early career with the Islanders, Leddy was quite good. sorry, with Chicago and the Islanders. Leddy was good. But he's really fallen off in the last 5 years for sure.
Yeah, he's been a guy who I would say more crawled more than walked to 1,000 games.
Yeah, like his first 500 or so were brilliant.
Yeah,
But
but then.
yeah, then time took its toll on Nick Leddy. Admittedly, he looked like his second last season in New York and his season in Detroit were pretty bad. He looked pretty good in his first season at St. Louis, but this season's been not great. So I was a little surprised that Nick Leddy made it to 1,000, but in his early career, it was good. He was a good player, but kind of overrated because of that history.
Yeah, it's more you're grading him more on his association more than anything.
And his cup ring.
Yeah, that's what I mean by
Yeah.
association.
Well, admittedly, he was an important part of that cup team.
He was. He was. I know Chicago fans would 100% agree with that. But still good on him. 1,000 games, it's nothing to sniff at, so.
Exactly. Like 1,000 games, and for the first part of that 1,000, it was pretty good. Like the first half, pretty good results.
This next news story, this is one that really kind of blew my mind this week because you and I were talking about this and you made a comment. He says, I cannot believe the Vegas Golden Knights are in their sixth season. And I said, it's hard to believe that this podcast and the Golden Knights started the exact same time. And
Must be
now.
weird, like looking back at what 24-year-old Tibbetay thought.
Oh my God. I know. God, don't ever go back and listen to those episodes, I tell you. Yeah. Vegas Golden Knights forward Jonathan Marchessault played in his 500th career game as a Vegas Golden Knight.
I'm old.
It really is kind of surprising when you look at the Golden Knights roster now compared to when they first came into the league because Marchessault and what, Riley Smith or that's
No,
all.
Wiley Smith's on Pittsburgh. It's Marchessault and William Karlsson.
Yeah, that's all that's left.
That is kind of what happens to team. Like, it's not very common where you have a team with a pretty stable roster like Boston. Like, if you want to talk about roster stability.
Yeah, but Vegas went the complete opposite way. They went for all in every year.
It's worked.
They got one more cup than ever than a lot of teams do, so they're doing something right.
And think about how many times they were close to a cup in that period too. They go to the finals in their first year. They're a couple games away from the Stanley Cup final in I want to say 2019. No, was it 2019?
No, I
No.
think no 2019. I think they lost.
No, it
They
was
lost.
2020 when they got wrecked by Montreal in the third round.
No. Yeah. No, 2019 is where what was it? They had like a 4-0
Oh,
lead.
yeah. And
And
then they
then
lost it in the course of one major penalty.
San Jose scored what, four times on the power play?
Yeah, on that major power play. Players still there from the expansion draft. Marchessault, Carlson, William Carrier, and Braden McNabb.
Yeah, and that's all that stayed because, again, you got Fleury who's still in the NHL. You got a couple of guys who are still in the NHL, but that's about it.
Yeah, and but it's also interesting to see like a lot of the players that were taken in that expansion draft that were seen kind of as misfits ended up on some pretty effective teams like Pierre-Édouard Belmont ended up on Tampa, for instance.
Yeah, but look at Jonathan Marchessault, right? Look at that guy's career trajectory before he went to Vegas. He was just kind of a guy who is he was in the NHL, but he wasn't anything special. And then he goes to Vegas and he didn't just go to the next level. He went to like three, four, five levels above that. He just elevated himself to where he's essentially a franchise player for Vegas.
Well, frankly, that's because Florida, there was no space for Marchessault on Tampa, and then Florida misused him. So when you gave him the opportunity he was clearly ready for, he took it.
Yeah, I've always liked Jonathan Marchessault, though. He's a
Yeah,
good player.
it continues to be.
Absolutely. Hockey Canada has named Rick Nash as the GM for the 2024 IIHF World Championship.
That's, I know a lot of people are saying it's got to be the easiest job in the world. I think it's a lot tougher than it looks
No,
because of how good his competition's going to be.
Yeah, I think, the easiest job for anybody's going to be 2026. But we mentioned that last week. I think for Rick Nash, though, I want to get your take on this because I was thinking about this today. Do you think Rick Nash is going to use this as an opportunity to possibly get a job in the NHL? And
Can't see why not.
not just any job in the NHL, the Columbus Blue Jackets job.
I'm not sure about the Jackets, but that might be the first open chair.
Because I think, what do they have? They have it. Do they? I don't even. Do they have a full-time GM right now that you're aware of?
They've no, because I know they just fired Kekalainen and then the VP of hockey ops is sitting in the chair.
Yeah, so maybe the Blue Jackets are looking at Rick Nash right now and possibly say if he has a lot of success, they might take a chance on him.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
I mean, think of how that would be so cool for Rick Nash. You go from being the franchise player to running the franchise.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat, actually.
Well, you know what's also really neat, Tim? And this is actually kind of an interesting story that I read this week. The Edmonton Oilers signed James Steffen to a 3-year contract. Now, you might be sitting there going, what does James Steffen have to do with anything, right? He's just a rookie, 3-year contract. Steffen is the son of former Atlanta Thrashers first overall pick Patrick Steffen. You know, the guy who openly missed the wide open net against Edmonton, and now his
Yeah.
kid's playing for them.
Does that count as going full circle?
I was thinking about that. I wanted to make that comment. I don't know if it actually counts, though. It's kind of a weird kind of shape, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's all right, though. And now we're going to close off top of the hour by talking about an Ottawa Senators story. The Ottawa Senators have announced that they will be inducting their team doctor, Dr. Donald Chow, to their Ring of Honor on March 24th, which was yesterday.
Yeah, and the Sens won the game too. We'll talk about that, which is really nice. And it's kind of, I'm glad to see that that Ring of Honor is actually being used now. Like, one of the things we spoke about for years on this show is just, we have a Ring of Honor. Let's use it. And I think for kind of the unsung heroes on a team, like Team Doc, like Team Physician, for instance, that's the perfect use.
It is. And it's kind of interesting because you think of the Ottawa Senators Ring of Honor. This is something we've talked about in the past, is the Senators' lack of usage when it comes to it. We're like, okay, like who would go in there? Would it be Hossa, Fischer, Spezza, Emery, you know, all these players? And the Senators like, no, it's our team doctor who's been here for 30 years.
Yeah, and I think that's a great use for it.
Yeah, very, very much thinking outside the box. And I respect and appreciate that.
Yeah. If you have a chance, do read Ian Mendez's article about it in The Athletic. Just has a great story about how Dr. Chow came into the position and what he likes about doing it.
Well, quite honestly, Tim, I mean, any of our listeners, they should be already reading all of Ian Mendez's stuff on The Athletic because he's fantastic at it.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, I guess that wraps up top there this week, which can mean only one thing. It's time to talk about some games. Now, we got four games on the schedule. We've got Sens versus the Bruins, Blues versus the Senators, Sens versus the Devils, and the Oilers versus the Senators. But before we do that, let's hit the music.
Time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Okay, Tim, let's start talking about the Sens versus the Bruins. This is a 6-2 Bruins victory. Sens goals were scored by Shane Pinto and Brady Tkachuk. Bruins goals were scored by David Pastrnak with the hat trick, Justin Prezel with two, and Jesper Boqvist. Shots were 31-26 for the Senators. So I do want to kick us off by talking about this real quick. Now, did you see that, you know, fans usually for a hat trick will throw hats on the ice, do whatever. Somebody threw a fake bear felt on the ice.
So here's the funny thing. This was kind of a game where people were excited to see if Pastrnak could reach a career milestone, which he only needed a goal to do.
What was the
milestone? I think it was 500 goals. Sorry, no, it was 700 points.
Didn't he already hit 700 points this year?
They're talking about a milestone in the game, and I thought it was 700 points. But anyway, he did end up hitting the milestone. Of course, he does it with a hat trick.
As, you know, David Pasternak would do.
Yeah, so he's actually just sitting one shy of 100 points this season. 44 goals and 55 assists. Just an incredible season from him. And yeah, as you're watching the hats right now, you saw this big fuzzy bear suit come down. And you're just like, all right, that's what we're doing this year.
You know what the bear suit reminded me of? And you're going to love this when I say this. Do you remember in Wicker Man when Nicolas Cage had the fake bear suit
on? Yeah.
That's exactly what it looked like to me.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Another weird thing that happened this game is we saw an absurd amount of the rink handyman, where he came out to repair the glass, to fix the bench door, and to check the glass at another point in the game, to the point where I think it was Chris Johnston was called. No, sorry, it was Jamie McLennan was calling the game. He's like, there's your MVP right now. It's the glass guy, especially in a first period that was frankly boring.
You know what? I actually sidebar her talking about Jamie McLennan. You know, in Top of the Hour, we were talking about the late Chris Simon when he got traded from the Rangers to the Calgary Flames.
Yeah.
Jamie McLennan was the guy that went the other way in that deal.
That's funny.
And you know, we've never ever asked Noodles. I remember hearing somewhere one time that when Chris got traded to Calgary, Jamie McLennan let Chris live in his apartment when he was out of town.
You know what? I wonder how many NHL players, if it's like a one-for-one player trade, would be willing to just like apartment swap with the person they got traded with.
You know, do you think we should ask Jamie McLennan this next time he's on the podcast?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, maybe we'll make a note of that for next time he's on. You know, when talking about this game, honest opinion, because I was really tempted to put the stop, he's already dead quote or the clip in here. Is this the kind of game that really deserves it, though?
It was a weird game. Like, Ottawa gave Boston some beautiful chances, but Ottawa stuck with them. Like, it was a pretty even, if boring, first period, despite Boston going up 2-0 with two Pasternak goals. But then, like, a very strong second, and then the third was a bit weaker, but still fine. Like, the Sens, they showed a lot of heart in this game. What was frustrating is, well, you can read Korpisalo's stat line.
And you know what's even more frustrating is when we get to the fourth game of the evening where he absolutely stole a game for us, and that's what really frustrates fans about him, because it's like, you see games like this, and like, what? Where was this guy all year?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it's, he's inconsistent in the wrong way. And like, that's not to say that Ottawa was perfect. Like the second goal in particular, Stützle makes a risky pass that gets just picked off by Pasternak and away he goes.
Yeah, that was one that you just watched that. Here's the thing, even as a fan, first of all, you cough the puck up to David Pasternak of all people.
Yeah.
And what, you're going to expect your goalie to actually stop that? The guy scored 50 in the NHL.
Yeah. Although the first Pasternak goal, and I said that a lot this year, that's not an NHL goal. And again, goalie letting in first shot of the game after Ottawa had really controlled the pace to start the game, really kind of took the edge off. Like, Pasternak shot the puck from above the left circle. Like, that's just not a, it's not a goal that an NHL goalie lets in.
No, and even going back to, even going to your comment there about scoring on the first shot, that's something that's very consistent this year with the Ottawa Senators. Is, and honestly, if we were to start a bingo game of stuff that happens to this team, I would have to say that would be one of the squares. Other team scores on the first three shots.
Yeah, pretty much. Honestly, I thought their second period was very good. Just aggressively took it to Boston. And we got a great goal by Pinto. And then for a power play that gets a lot of criticism, the Ottawa power play was got lots of great looks this game. And the Pinto goal is one of them where Ottawa cycles the puck and they finally beat Allmark after a lot of great putt work led by Chabot. Giroux takes the puck, fakes a shot, passes it to Pinto, who's in the middle of the slot and just gets it away. Just beautiful.
No, that's a very nice goal by Shane Pinto. And yeah, there's not really a ton I could really say about this game. I mean, obviously, when you see a score line for like 6-2 for the Bruins, you're really not that surprised that Boston took it to us in this game. But again, what can you really say, right?
It is just one of those games where it's like you'd like a better result. But then it was also just kind of a sleepy affair, all things considered. Like the shots in the first period were 6-4 in favor of Boston. And then the second period, Ottawa gets 23 shots. Like they just took it to Boston. And then the third period, another snoozer, 4 shots for Ottawa, 9 for Boston. And yeah, just. Not great.
So it was kind of a roller coaster game.
Yeah.
Goes down, then up, then down.
Yeah, pretty much. Want to go into the St. Louis game?
Absolutely. Blues and Senators. This is a 5-2 Blues victory. Blues goes recorded by Jake Neighbors with 2, Brandon Saad, Colton Parayko, and Jordan Kyrou. Sens goes recorded by Mark Kestelec and Dominik Kubalik. Shots were 39-27 for Ottawa. So Ottawa didn't lose this game. Joel Hofer won this game for St. Louis.
Well,
Well, I shouldn't say Ottawa didn't lose because honestly, the Sens should have had some of those goals. But yeah, Joel Hofer, from what I saw, really kept St. Louis in it.
that, and again, Ottawa just not getting the goaltending. Again, Forsberg posted a 0.85. Like, at some point, your goalie has to make a save, and that's it, just didn't happen. Like, the Colton Parayko goal. To make it a 2-0. Like, sure, you let him in front of the net, but like, that's a positioning save. Like, it's just kind of that frustrating thing where the Sens were really taking it. And yeah, Joel Hofer robbed the Sens multiple times. There's another one where, like, the puck, like, the neighbor's goal, there was multiple opportunities for Forsberg to, he should have been able to kind of smother a puck that hit him right in the jersey, but it bounces out. And then unfortunately, Ottawa's not able to clear, like, well, Travis Hamonic can't clear the crease. So it's just a bit of a frustrating game. And even though Ottawa really took it to St. Louis, they just didn't get the result.
No, and yet this is another result where I shouldn't say we're surprised that we lost 5-2, but I think what's really more surprising about me, Tim, and I've commented this over the years, when you see away fans that come to the building, I always complain about Toronto fans, that's an obvious one. But then again, you have teams that come into the CTC and you look at some of the fans in the crowd and you're like, that's a really random team to be cheering for, especially when you live in Ottawa. St. Louis is one of those teams because there was Blues fans in the building and you're like,
Where do you come from?
what possessed you to cheer for the Blues in Ottawa?
Maybe they just really like Keith?
Maybe. Oh, maybe they were Pavel Dimitra fans.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, again, you want to talk about a team from like the late 90s, early 2000s that could have and should have gone to the finals, the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, but then again, they were just in. The absolutely brutal West.
Oh my God, you have no. Yeah, it was really bad. And actually, something we should ask Jamie McLennan next time he's on the show. When he does Sens games where a team that he played for comes to town, I wonder if he's ever seen somebody in the crowd wearing one of his jerseys. He must have.
I'd hope he has. That'd be neat.
Yeah, I would say St. Louis, probably more likely than not.
Oh, just because he. Played a more visible role on the team.
Yeah, I would say St. Louis. I mean, Calgary, I guess, would be the other team that I would think you might see a McLennan jersey, but
Yeah.
no, probably a Blues. Probably Blues, I think, would be the more likely one.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Are you ready to head off into the third game of the evening, Tim?
Yeah, let's do it.
Senators and Devils. This is a 5-2 Senators victory. Senators scored by Matthew Joseph, Ridly Greig, Angus Cruickshank, Tomas Chabot, and Drake Batherson. Devils goals scored by Jesper Bratt and Thomas Nozick. Shots were 25-20 for the Senators. Yeah, I'm still going to go ahead and say it. Those black wordmark devil jerseys, they're still bad.
Oh, Chelsea thinks they're Chelsea thought they were cool.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a fan of them,
You don't
honestly.
see cursive word marks much in hockey, which makes them unique.
That's probably the best word you can describe is unique. I don't think they're good.
I think they're kind of all right.
Yeah. I don't know. But you know who looked really good in this game though, Tim? Ridly Greig and Angus Cruickshank. And I saw your comments on Twitter about this. I have to agree with you on that.
Yeah, I'd like to see them hopefully graduate to the NHL because I thought they played good. Sorry, I thought they played well. And you saw it a lot, especially with the Cruickshank line was rather effective at just making sure that once the puck started moving, it kind of kept moving. And that was the first thing that I noticed. The other thing is Angus Cruickshank has a really nice release.
He does. I mean, that shot, that's a move that you don't see a lot of vet, not a lot of veterans, sorry, a lot of rookies make. So to see him have the confidence, especially when you have Tomas Chabot giving you the pass on that one.
And it wasn't the easiest pass to receive either. So, like, it was a good pass by Shabbat, but that's just a hard one to take, right?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing, at least he was on his good side. He wasn't on. It wasn't like a right shot trying to pass to his left.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Ridly Greig goal, that was nice.
Well,
You do got a feel for Jake
Jake
Allen that one
Allen.
because he thinks he has it and just slips under the pad.
That's the sort of goal that would go in against Ottawa this season, where it's something that should be saved, but just isn't.
Yeah, I mean that's a goal. Oh, I would agree with that. Yeah, that's a goal that would go in. What else would go in? Shot from the point, shot through the crowd.
But
Just
like, what's so funny about this Greig goal too is just the entry is just a shoot-in by Brännström, which the Sens are like. Are able to just get on. And there's the pass to Greig from Joseph. Joseph's at the blue line. Greig is by the net, goes through three New Jersey players. It's kind of impressive that Ridly Greig managed to get open and then leave a line open. Like it literally goes through one of New Jersey's, the legs of a Jersey defenseman. Like actually wild.
now, on the Devils' side, I do have to give Jasper Bratt some real credit on that goal. It
Yeah.
was a nice move. I'll give you that.
And it felt kind of like a like if you watched the Boston game, the St. Louis game, you were feeling, oh no, here we go again. With Korpisalo letting in two goals in 30 seconds. And the Nozick goal is definitely one of those ones where it's like, really?
Yeah, a lot of these games that we've been watching in the last while, or heck, even all season, definitely reminds me of the opening cutscene to San Andreas where CJ's like, oh shit, here we go
Here we go
again.
again. Yeah, pretty much. It's such a weird game. Like watching the New Jersey game, not so much the next game we're going to talk about, you see what Ottawa was going for and that the team really doesn't need that much to be competitive. With Ottawa just controlling the play and taking their chances and keeping up with, like, admittedly, New Jersey's another team that's really struggled this year, but they're able to keep up decently well with Boston. The Carolina game wasn't awful. Wasn't as awful as the scoreboard made it look.
Now we're talking about the Devils, and you know, you talk about teams who have greatly underachieved this season. That crown has to go to New Jersey.
Well, Dougie Hamilton suffering a catastrophic injury early, so you lose your best defenseman for the whole season. Then your goaltending just kind of disappears. You've lost Jack Hughes to multiple injuries.
Yeah, and then you lose a piece on the back end as well. due to the that whole thing with the Hockey Canada.
With Hockey Can, the whole thing, yeah, the criminal charges. That's a team that's just had a catastrophic run.
Is the term that we want to use here is cursed?
Yeah, this is a cursed season. It is not a bad way to put it.
No, honestly, and I think with their goaltending situation, I feel that them missing the playoffs really gives them the incentive to try and go get like a Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah, or seeing what we can get, yeah. I was actually really happy with the Shabbat-Brännström pairing too. Aggressive on pucks and just really good at hemming in New Jersey.
I was going to say, well, that's been a defensive pairing over the years that we've talked about. And the problem with those two is that you have flashes of them being like a very good pairing, and then flashes where you just watch it, like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Well, I think it's the hard thing with Shabbat-Brännström is they are a good pairing together, but for whatever reason, whenever an error happens, they never get bailed out. And they're also players that do like to kind of, they're good at moving the puck, but they'll make the risky play. 9 times of 10, it looks good, but that 10th time is just like, oh, not getting bailed out, which is just, it's frustrating to watch because like both are really effective players.
It's almost like if you see two Erik Karlssons on the back end together. Not
Kind of.
to that talent level,
Yeah, but it's
but
just
just the
like,
way that they would try and do the risky plays, and they wouldn't have like a Mark Methot back there to help bail them out.
well, not even a Mark Methot. It's the forwards, for whatever reason, the forwards aren't able to help in ways that often they should. And the goalie's just like, I don't know. You know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that, Tim. So, Tim, normally that would wrap up the games for the week, but we're going to add a bonus game. And the game that we're going to be talking about is last night's game, the Edmonton Oilers versus the Ottawa Senators. This is a 5-3 Senators victory. Oilers goes recorded by Adam Henrique, Leon Draisaitl, and Zach Hyman with his 50th goal of the season. Sens goes recorded by Jacob Chychrun with two, Tim Stützle, Drake Batherson, and Parker Kelly. Shots were 36-16 for Edmonton. Jonas Korpisalo, where
Yeah.
has this been all year?
Where were you, Corpy?
We mentioned this earlier. Jonas Korpisalo has been such a frustrating player because everything goes in, and it makes it even more frustrating. When you see games like this and you think, this is why we signed you and you're not doing this.
Yeah, because it's like in the games that we talked about this week. We have the Boston game, which is just like, followed by a decent, a pretty good performance in New Jersey, and this brilliant performance against Edmonton. Like absolutely brilliant. Like Ottawa hung around in a game they weren't part of on the back of Korpisalo.
No, this is a game, and I was telling you before we hit record, I watched the 5 minutes of this game, and I just went, you know what? No, I'm not going to watch this because it was so frustrating to see the Senators try to do something in the offensive zone, and the second they lose the puck, Edmonton's already halfway down the ice.
Pretty much. You don't even really get the excuse of travel back to back because Edmonton also did that. Like, it's just a game that Ottawa wasn't really prepared for. And it was just, yeah, a frustrating watch. The Schickard goal was very funny. The 4-3 Schickard goal is just very funny.
Yeah, but that first goal, though, as much as the goal was nice, Drake Batherson with that move, God, that was so good.
That's just kind of what we expect from Drake Batherson at this point.
And heck, even the goal he had against the Devils was really nice, too.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think at this point, I don't think you can really say, like, I think Drake Batherson has emerged as one of the league's better scoring talents. Not like, not a superlative talent by any means, but his finishing is good and his ability to set up plays is really nice as well.
Yeah, the only downside is that he's been very streaky.
Yeah. And like on the contract he signed, $4 million for a streaky guy that you can move up and down the lineup. Not bad. you take it.
Yeah. Now, if he was getting paid 5.5, 6 million, you have a problem.
Yeah, but like
At four, you could stomach it.
Yeah, like what's funny about Dorian's contracts are so weird. They're either A pluses or Fs. There's like no middle ground.
And then you have the Josh Norris one, which would have been good if he wasn't injured.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
That's probably the only asterisk I would have to say out of the big deals he signed, because Stützle seemed to be pretty good. Sanderson seemed to be decent.
Sanderson's is going to be great.
It is. Batherson seems to be really good. Yeah, Norris is the only one out of our core pieces that's been kind of an asterisk, because he signed him, he's done well, but he's not healthy.
No. And otherwise, it's like I've been pretty happy with depth they need more of. I'm hoping to see like, yeah, more of Angus Cruikshank, more of Ridley Greig, and more of Zack Ostapchuk. Because like if those three are the real deal for like a top nine or bottom six role, that cleans up a lot of Ottawa's issues. And if you can find like if they decide to keep Brännström, which I think they should, Shabbat, Chychrun, Zub, Brännström, Sanderson, that's five good defensemen. You find one more, find a way to do something with Travis Hamonic. And then put Jacob Bernerdocker as your seventh D. Your D is good enough.
There you go, Dylan DeMello.
See if you can bring back DeMello, yeah.
Yeah, we need another team, Dad.
Other than the this Edmonton game where Ottawa is just non-existent. But then again, I guess it's like 4 games in a week is pretty tough. So I will give them that. But Edmonton's also just, they are a better team.
Yeah, and that's very much an understatement in every word.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in fairness, when you got two of the top three players in the game right now on your roster, you should be a better team.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So, Tim, I do not have any more comments to make on these games. If you are ready to head off into the close for another episode.
Sounds good.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening to the Third Line Plug SenseCast. I hope you've enjoyed it, because believe me, Tim and I love recording it for you. You can find the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Google Play. As well, you can find us on social media at Third Line Plug. I'm also on social media at Great White Gipster, and Tim's on Twitter at M901 Honey Badger. So, Tim, for the games of the week, we've got three games to be talking about. We've got Wednesday night, we travel down to Buffalo, New York to play the Buffalo Sabres. Thursday, we travel home to play Connor Bedard and the Chicago Blackhawks. And Saturday, we travel to Winnipeg to play the Winnipeg Jets.
Such a weird grab bag of teams. You have a team that's looked better lately than just the catastrophic year they've had in Buffalo. The moribund Blackhawks, where apparently we just get Mrazek'd every time. And then the other Canadian team that's just had a really hard time bringing fans into the stands despite winning.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that there are a myriad of reasons as to that, but no, I don't think Winnipeg's going to be moving.
No, but it's just so weird to see that they've had these issues bringing it. They've had issues with attendance.
Yeah. Well, how much of a thank you? It's a corporate thing, though.
Like, that could be it. But the other one is just like, given how, well, it's that. I wonder if it's wages not keeping up with inflation.
Yeah, but that's a problem everywhere,
That's a
though.
problem everywhere. But for a team that relies more on walk-ups, that's a big problem.
Yeah, the saving grace for Winnipeg is at least you have other Canadian teams that come to town.
Yeah.
That kind of helped that a bit, so.
But yeah, we're looking at pretty, yeah, like the average attendance has been around 12,000.
Well, what is empty or. They don't refer to themselves as MTS Center anymore, whatever the Jets Arena is. Just put it.
Canada Life.
Because they're what, 14?
I want to say they're 15 or 16.
I wouldn't say 16. I would
What's
say
Canada Life Center?
14, maybe 15.
All right, let's see what we got here. Canada Life Center. Thanks for getting use. 17,000 for a
No way.
Metallica concert. So you probably knock a thousand or two off for GA. Yeah, no, it's a big arena. Let's see. 400,000 capacity of 15,000 for hockey.
Okay. So
Yeah,
that
so
was.
it's a big arena.
Okay. I would have thought they would have been more like 13, but.
I don't think the NHL would allow a team to play in such a small arena for as their main home.
Oh, okay. As your main home, I'm thinking like Tim, Arizona.
I understand. Mullet Arena. Do we have to bring back our Locked On Coyotes guest?
Oh, dude, only if you talk to somebody. Until next time, guys. I am your host, Dave Gibson.
And this has been Tim Jackson.
Ghost.
Woo!